Thanks for coming to session 134, the conflicting identities of LGBT Mormons. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you, if you have not already done so, to please turn off or silence your cell phones. Remember also, we'll be holding questions and comments to the end. So if you have things to say, please wait until our speaker has finished up before you say them. This session is being recorded. You will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor if you're interested. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to Sunstone. And don't forget, of course, to check out all of the book exhibits and available books for purchase on the main floor. The session will be 60 minutes long, and we will do our utmost to keep it in the 16-minute time frame. And this is our presenter, who is bravely doing a whole panel alone. I've done that, and it's a lot of talking. So I'm glad you have your apostate water. This is Amber Whiteley. Am I saying that right?
Yes,
good.
Thank you.
Who is a contributing author for a book chapter for the American Psychological Association titled Conflicting Identities, Sexual Minority, Transgender, and Gender Nonconforming Individuals Navigating Between Religion and Gender, Sexual Orientation, and Identity. The chapter discusses various religious identities. Whiteley advocated for Mormons to be included in the chapter, so this presentation will discuss the findings from that chapter and what the implications are for both mental health workers who help the LDS community as well as LDS sexual minorities. Amber Whiteley is a doctoral student in counseling psychology here at the University of Utah, not here in the U room. She's one of the proud founders of MormonFeminist.org and continues to run the site along with its various social media outreaches today. So we'll turn the time over to Amber.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And as long as it's not going to mess up the recording too much, I'm okay with questions throughout because it doesn't need to be too formal. This is very formal, and we don't need to do that here. I'm going to be talking about, this is the book that we wrote a chapter in. You're probably asking, like, what is the book? And I don't mean to, like, toot my own horn, but it is literally the book for counselors. If you are a counselor who works with LGBT clients, you have this book. Or if you are taking a class, if you're in a counseling class and you work a counseling class maybe on counseling sexual minorities, it is the book that you buy and you study. And it now, for the first time ever, includes Mormons in that book. And so the chapter that we wrote for this book was on how to counsel specifically religious clients who are LGBT. And I wanted to start and say that before I got into this, that I recognize that I'm a straight ally and that my role in this, because I recognize that there's complications with myself being a straight ally, I wanted to recognize that I have a lot of privilege writing this, but I also recognize that it's my role to be able to use my privilege to bring awareness to an issue that really is important to our community. And I also was one of the only straight heterosexual authors for this chapter. So I was able to work under and learn a lot from the other authors. I feel a little uncomfortable that they're not here presenting with me. They're all in St. Louis. I worked with them in St. Louis, but I just wanted to bring that up. However, I also feel like it's important for me as an ally to be able to utilize my privilege to help the community. So I just wanted to bring that up. So before we started, Dr. Koshbeck West, she was my mentor. She's the first author. I was the second author. She, incredible person. She was atheist, is atheist. And she recognized from the very beginning that even being atheist, the importance of religious identity to our clients, And that also that's something that's really downplayed in the mental health community, that it could be hard to let go of your religious identity. And so I put this quote up from her because I remember being so impressed that that someone who is lesbian and atheist would still want to emphasize within this book chapter the grief and the mourning that someone would go through while giving up their religious identity, if they were considering giving up their religious identity. So we started off before writing this book chapter with two assumptions. One, and this is going to be a real shocker, that it's difficult to be religious and be LGBT. And two, that mental health workers often don't get the importance of your religious identity. And they don't often get that loss, that grieving that you feel. And that if your counselor tells you the only way to happiness is if you give up your religion, that we as counselors, and I apologize, I wanted to ask first, I know I keep saying we as counselors because this was written for, the book itself was written for an audience of counselors. How many here in the room are actually counselors, mental health workers? Okay, so only a few of you. I will try and stop saying we. But that if a counselor were to tell you the only way to happiness was to give up something that was so important to you. So here are the other religions that we included in the book. Since this is Sunstone, I'm guessing you want to hear more about the Mormon part. So I wanted to talk about, I could go in for a really long time about why we chose each of them. I mean, and I won't go into a long list of them, but basically here's the reason why we, or how I was able to include Mormons. From the very get-go, I was very adamant that we should include Mormons, which I admitted from the get-go. I said, you know, I don't want to be biased as a researcher, even though I clearly was, but I thought it was very important that that we were to include Latter-day Saints into this work of literature for several reasons. One, there is so little research that is done on LGBT Mormons. And when you can start to become, bring awareness to LGBT Mormons, then other research will follow. And secondly, I knew that it would be important for counselors to have that awareness, because if we were talking about yesterday, this brings me up to yesterday when I was at the Mormon Mental Health Association, and I'm sure other Mormons who have gone to therapy have experienced this. I know I've experienced this myself. When you go to see a counselor who isn't Mormon and they've never read any literature about what it's like, what the Mormon culture is like, you often spend a long time explaining to them what the Mormon culture is like. So I knew it was important to have it in an official American Psychological Association handbook. So the process for including it, and this is what we listed in the handbook itself, media coverage. It's not a surprise that Mormons love their press statements about how we're for marriage equality. So we listed that as a reason. The prevalence in the United States, this was surprising to me, and it still is. We have as many members in the United States, us Mormons, as Jewish members do. There's as many Mormon members as there are Jewish members. And we are one of the fastest growing members in, or excuse me, churches in the United States, and that's based off of the Pew study. Now, there are arguments about, you know, where the numbers are actually coming from, but we included that because we were able to get Mormons included in the study, so it worked to our advantage in this case. And then also discussing faiths that are not affirmational, because it wouldn't really make sense to discuss discuss faiths that were really accepting of LGBT populations, because then you won't see a lot of conflict with their members and they're not going to need as much mental health care. So, So the literature that is specific to LGBT Mormons, this was our section that we included. I wanted to warn you all that a lot of this is going to be a review for you if you follow LGBT issues within Mormonism. And at this time, if you need to check Facebook or do anything on your phone, feel free, no problem. But I do think that there's value in going over it just so that you know officially what is included for counselors, what kind of information they are getting from this. Okay, so what are the conflicting messages about LGB Mormons? There's obviously the statement that, let's see, is there anyone here that wants to read? Yes, go ahead.
The whole thing?
Well, just the first statement.
Statement that same-sex orientation is a choice that leads to sickness, depression, and poor spiritual mental health.
Ugh, terrible. Okay. Okay, and then this kind of like switches, kind of, right? Okay, who wants to read the next quote from MormonsandGays.org? Oh, and I want to add, when I first told my professor that the real official name of our official church website was MormonsandGays.org, she thought I was making that up. And she said we need to get a new PR department. We really need to get a little more PC. Yeah, go ahead, Brittany.
Statement indicating that same-sex attraction in and of itself is not a sin, but to act on that attraction is a sin.
Okay, so we're like, it's okay, a little bend, right? Like a little compromise. Okay, so anyone else want to read another statement? Yes, go ahead.
Additionally, the church advocates for its members to be accepting and kind to all of God's children, including those who are same-sex oriented.
Yes, like so much better, right? Like, let's focus on that. Yes. Good. Okay. Let's like stop getting into other people's business and just like focus on loving it one another. Okay. And then who wants to read the last statement? Just the part that's in quotes, while. Yes.
While preaching kindness, statements are released that conflict and reiterate the church's position on same-sex marriage. While many, while many governments and well-meaning individuals have redefined marriage, the Lord has not. Pierce, 2014, April 6th.
Right. Thank you. So, we're like going all over the place, right? Like back and forth between, okay, let's not focus on, let's accept one another to. We have to condemn to, by the way, marriage has to be between a man and a woman. So you can see how if you're LGB, you would feel really conflicted. You might feel some moments of peace that you might be able to exist in this church. And you might feel some moments of there's no way, or even feeling some moments of internalizing the shame and the guilt. Okay, now, conflicting messages about TGNC. TGNC stands for Transgender Gender Nonconforming. It's a blanket statement that we use in academia that basically stands for anything that doesn't fall within the gender binary. Who wants to read these quotes? Yes.
Gender is an essential characteristic of individual premortal, mortal, and eternal identity and purpose.
Right. And, of course, this is from the Family Proclamation. And really, this could be interpreted in a somewhat good way, right? Bishops could interpret it in a way that, that stinks that your body is imperfect, but you yourself know what your gender is or is, but often bishops don't interpret it this way. Okay, and so who wants to read the statement from the church handbook? Yeah.
The last one up there?
Mm-hmm.
It says, TGNC persons have been accepted in the church and may be baptized, although those who have undergone gender affirmation surgery may not receive the priesthood or enter the temple.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that was, we rephrased because we didn't like the language in the handbook itself. So we rephrased it to TGNC. And so the church is saying, we accept you into our church, but the things that are most important to our church, you're not allowed to actually participate in those things. The things that we have been saying to you that all your life we have been training you to go through these things, you can't participate in those things. So how much have they really, are they really accepting transgender, gender nonconforming Mormons? We did include a long list of resources because we thought it would be important for counselors to know that there's a wide variety of interwebs, societies for people to be able to turn to for a community online, to be able to build a community of affirmational sources. Notice the long list of official church websites and the use of PC church websites. And so we included those on there. And North Star LDS was an interesting one because it almost read like a church website. In fact, it took me a minute to find that it was not affiliated with the LDS Church because they say so many things that sound as if they are affiliated with the LDS Church. So how do we as a church stand up with the rest of Christianity with you in the U.S.? We are somehow doing better, but like not, it's hard to say yes and no. Because this is so painful for me to say, so excuse me for saying it. We're doing somewhat better. We are more progressive in that we allow LGBT members to actually attend our church. Do we allow them to fully participate? No. So there are 39% of Christian churches that will allow, and this breaks my heart that there are churches that will turn you away at the door, the majority of them that will. Only 20% will allow the ordination, so we fall under that category. Yes?
When it's doing percentage, is that by 39% of the 46, or is that going by actual numbers? Because some denominations are obviously a lot bigger than others.
Yeah, no, that's going by the actual 46.
Okay.
Yeah, not by the number of congregation, just the 46.
Okay.
Yeah, good question. And then less than 9% will allow same-sex couples to marry within the LDS Church. Although, if you'll notice, this is in 2013, so it'd be really interesting to see how that changes now that marriage equality is legal. Yes?
So when we're taking this into account, and also specifically the church, are you guys taking into account someone who just identifies as a sexual minority or someone who is, quote-unquote, practicing?
Oh, gotcha.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and this is always a hard area within LGBT research because there will always be the category of questioning where people won't even identify within the survey, right? And it's hard to get a fully accurate idea of people who will even feel comfortable coming out onto a survey because they're not fully able to come out to themselves yet. No, is basically what I'm able to say to you, is that we're not able to get the most accurate representation. It's an accurate representation of whoever is comfortable coming out within to themselves. But I guess what you're asking is about people that are actively identifying as LGB, right?
Versus, are they, so for instance, if someone was a mixed orientation marriage, if they're identifying as being gay, but they're not practicing.
But not practicing?
Right.
Well, this is
acting on it.
Right. This is specifically about what the churches would allow. So for that instance, it would be up to the church whether or not they would allow that mixed orientation marriage to attend their church or not.
Okay.
And with our within our church, obviously they would. And but it would be up to each church individually. So I don't know if that makes sense.
I just wondered if you were differentiating that, but it doesn't sound like it did because that would be chaotic.
It would, so, yeah.
Okay.
And I want to be clear too that this book chapter was a literature review. So we, even though we were conducting our own research at the time, this was a literature review of all the other research that was available at the time. So we didn't actually conduct our own research specifically for this book chapter. So if that makes sense. Yeah.
Sorry, just back to the question about the 39, 20, and 9%.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense even of which direction they would move if you weighted the churches by how big they are? Like, are the bigger churches more progressive or are the smaller?
That's a great question. And I actually don't have those numbers in front of me right now. My sense is that, you know, some of the biggest churches were, like, we included Southern Baptist in this church, and they were one of the largest congregations in the U.S., and they were very strict in that they wouldn't allow. But then you have also some larger denominations such as, like, progressive non-denominational church or Christian churches who will allow and will even. Those churches were harder in that, and this was specifically the study, Porter, Ronenberg, and Witten. It was up to their discretion as to which denominations they allowed. And so my belief is when we read the study is that they wouldn't allow certain denominations that were weren't organized, if that makes sense. So there's a huge blanket under non-denominational Christians, but then there's tons of breakoffs within those, and so they had to choose which ones they would include, and not all of those would make the 46. So yes. Oh, sorry.
When it says allow, should I interpret that to mean that they will not turn away a casual visitor, but once a potential congregant applies to be a member of that church,
mm-hmm.
that they'll have some kind of a, call it a screening interview,
mm-hmm.
that would decline or accept them based on that. They're not going to turn a casual visitor away.
Right.
On a random visit.
I would think you're right there, because how would they know what your sexual orientation is from looking
only at, by dress and grooming is gross.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Perception.
Yeah. Yep. I think you answered your question.
They're not gonna bounce. It's not like they're going to have a person at the door.
Right. A bouncer that asks you about your sexual orientation.
Although I do think it should be mentioned that there is such thing as like turning away gender non-conforming people. So there are ways of dressing that people associate with LGBT culture, and I do think in certain conservative environments you possibly will get like actually kicked out. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
Including actually the LDS Church and certain congregations. It's not a formal thing, but mm-hmm. it's definitely happened.
Yeah. Okay. So the one thing that we found in common while we were looking up the different congregations, and when I say congregations, I'm talking about the online, or not the online communities, the five different sects that we looked at, the Catholics, Baptists, Islam, Mormonism, and Judaism, thank you, is that everyone had a LGBT online community. And I thought that was really telling of the importance of an online community for the LGBT community. And there was a difference between LGB and then TGNC. For each community to gather and have a community of affirming. And it was a healing way to be able to... each community was different, and here are two really great ones for Christian blanket, and it's a way for each community to, and we've seen this within our own Mormon community, to affirm And each community has a difference in that there's a difference between, gathering my thoughts. Some communities serve different needs in that some are affirming, some are healing, and some are helping others to either integrate their identities, or some are helping that process of leaving your religious community. I think it really goes to show that need for the community to, for everyone to find their own sense of being able to gather with one another and have shared experiences with one another for healing. Yeah.
Do you mind reading those websites?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, because they come up. So this is whosoever.org, and it's spelled whosoever.org. And then down here is transfaithonline.com. And so transfaith is obviously for TGNC. And then whosoever is for both LGB and TGNC.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, and those are great for, like I said, I think that our Mormon communities are specific for Mormon culture. These are great for specific Christian culture. But they can be great for specifically trying to build spirituality. And we found that a lot in searching those is that a lot of, and as I'm going to get into research here, a lot of LGBT communities start moving towards spirituality because it's very healing to start moving towards that. And so here's the specific research. So as I mentioned earlier, there's really not too much research specifically about Mormons, but there is about religious LGBT populations. And so I'm going to go into that because I definitely think that it applies. So here's some information about affirming religions. If you happen to be in an affirming religion, the great news is that you have greater life satisfaction, happiness, and well-being. So there are actually religions that bring you happiness. I shouldn't say actually. That's so mean. So terrible. But there are religions, affirming religions, that can that bring you really, like, even there are studies that show that you can live a longer life if you're in a affirming religion as an LGBT person. Now, here is the information about non-affirming religions, and you'll notice there's quite a bit. So first is that you get these messages that you're, and I apologize, I should have started off this presentation saying that some of this is triggering. It is triggering, and I apologize for that. The first, and some of that is that you know this, and I apologize for that as well. The first is that that you get these messages that you're a second-class citizen, and that you are immoral. And these messages become internalized, especially from authority figures, that you are taught that this is the absolute truth. And so getting these messages, that leads to shame, guilt, and internalized heterosexism. I get the question a lot, what is internalized heterosexism? Internalized heterosexism is the belief that, not marriage, but just that it's supposed to be, any relationship is supposed to be between a man and a woman. And basically, you get this belief that homophobia is the way, or you yourself become homophobic. That's what internalized heterosexism is. So what else happens? As you are internalizing this information, it actually impacts, this isn't, shouldn't be surprising, but it's just the way it is. It actually impacts the way your identity forms. Because once you start having these feelings of, and this is specifically to an LGB identity formation, it makes you start to question your identity, and makes it difficult to form positive sexual identity. You start to question yourself and have a negative internalized sense of self. Let's see here. And then overall, this last one is a long, long list, just saying that there are tons of studies that have shown that overall conservative religions are detrimental to mental health.
To everyone, or studies specifically?
To LGB. Sexual. Yeah. Thank you for asking that.
But maybe to everyone.
But, in some way. I mean, yeah. If you would like to make that interpretation, I will not be making that interpretation for you. Okay, so the next slide is what will this lead to? And I'm sure you already know what this leads to, but we will ask what this leads to. This leads to a lot of self-blame, and that's heartbreaking. Greater internalized heterosexism, isolation, depression, suicidal thinking and ideation and attempts. And then when you specifically compare the difference between those who attend affirming religions and those who participate in disaffirming religions experience less emotional well-being, less social support, and greater identity conflict, which is just sad. That's my comment on it. So now comes the choice. So you, let's say that this is a case study, and that I have gone through this and experienced it, and now I am a responsible adult who is seeking therapy because therapy is natural and normal, and everyone should experience therapy once in their life. I fully believe that. So what are my choices in therapy? Well, the sad thing is both clients and therapists believe there are only two choices in therapy or outside of therapy: leave your religion or change your sexual orientation. And I want to apologize because at this point the literature stops including TGNC. There's only information at this point about sexual identity. From here on out, there is one mode of therapy that will discuss gender identity, but the rest of it will discuss sexual identity. So I just wanted to put that disclaimer out there. So again, this is the sad thing, is that most believe that they must change or leave their religion. And when so many people, like Mormons, who are raised that you must be Mormon, it is such an important part of your identity that you cannot leave. Sometimes resolution involves privileging one identity over another, and other times it shouldn't. And I lost my spot. As I'm going through this, I'm going to be focusing more on sexual identity because that's what the research focuses on. But I wanted to note that TGNC participants actually, typically within the research, it's seen that they actually start leading towards spirituality. And that further develops their faith in a way that they have more personal growth. They resolve their dilemma through gender identity, through a journey of faith. By starting to become more spiritual, they reframe their ideas of what their gender used to look like within their religion by starting to think about it in a more spiritual light instead of within a religious way, within a religious strict way. So So there are actually three therapeutic approaches. So the first one, I'm not even going to talk about because it's not even an option. It's not even an option, okay? And the entire book chapter that we talked about it, it was just all about the bad information that's out there and about how damaging it is, okay? So we're all going to say it together. Say it with me. Reparative therapy is not an option, okay? Okay, I want you to repeat it with me. Reparative therapy is not an option. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. However, unfortunately, therapists have tried to use this before in the past. There is the option of leaving one's faith tradition. And I will admit, and I will admit that it's a personal bias of myself and other researchers that worked on this book chapter that we thought that that we've had clients where we had hoped that they would move towards this. However, I think it's more important as a counselor to have my client lead their journey and their experience, because each client knows their own story more than I know their story. And it's more important for them to guide their story than it is for me to push them along a path that I know nothing about. So that is why there's a third option, which is engage in therapy, centered around integrating the two. And yes, it's actually possible. And we're going to focus on that for now. Oh, actually, no, we're not. We're going to talk about when it's a good choice to leave one's religion. So it's a majority of people will leave their religion, 40%, will reject or move towards a more affirming faith. Many become more spiritual. And as I've mentioned several times, that has so many mental health benefits because you reconciliate past negative religious experiences, and not just reconciliate, you reframe them in this new healing way, and I fully recommend it even if you stay religious. That's what I'm saying here in the bottom slide, that you regain self-confidence and trust in past spiritual experiences. So perhaps you've had these experiences that you thought, well, maybe this wasn't actually a good experience for me. You are able to reframe it in a new way using spirituality. You start to trust your own self instead of trusting in a religion, because you're able to start trusting yourself. You're taking the reins over your own spirituality instead of allowing a religion that has maybe misguided you to believe that you were immoral. You allow yourself to bring you to a place of health and peace. Okay. But it's really important if you do leave your religion to grieve it. And that this leaving your own religion, as some of us here may know, can it feel like experiencing an actual, like, this is an actual study, it can feel like experiencing an actual divorce or death, that those who leave their religion actually experience the same levels of grief as experiencing a divorce or death, which makes sense. It's such an innermost part of your identity for so many people. And this is especially true for people of color, especially people who are raised in the Southern Baptist faith. I think it's very similar in that they're raised that's who they are. They are Baptist first, and then another part of their identity second. And this was really interesting. There's this study here, right here, that a lot of therapists had assumed they'd had clients come in. Let's say I had a client come in named Bob who told me that he was gay and that he was Mormon. And I'd say to him, man, that must be really hard. Your bishop must not like you. and right off the bat assuming that he had problems with his church before he had even said anything. Now, he could be completely happy within his church. He might have a great bishop. He might have a great ward. Who knows? Maybe he lives on the East Coast, and this is where he's experiencing this really affirming faith. But the fact that counselors are assuming things is actually making things worse. So here's where we integrate. So why do we integrate? Because you feel so connected. You just do. Myself as a therapist and other therapists, we have to understand and remember that, and I think this is something, a bias I need to remember, and I kind of put this in here for myself, that you can experience, and other people can experience, good experiences within their faith, even if they are LGBT and really want to stay within their faith. And we as a community need to not assume that they are experiencing, even if they are within a system of oppression, it might not be the right thing for them to leave that system of oppression. Each person has to tell their own story and decide when it's right, if it's right at all, to leave that system. And that's hard. That's really hard sometimes, because what's right for us isn't always what's right for everyone else. So, this is Haldeman's. Haldeman, if you ever want to do some light reading, Haldeman is like the expert is integration, and has given so many great, done so much great research about integration. And so he has three stages: assessment, intervention, integration. Assessment is a time to basically evaluate any sexual behaviors and desires and explore how that religious culture affects your views about sexuality. And then based on a thorough understanding of the forces at play, the therapist and the client collaborate in choosing goals for therapy and interventions in reaching those goals. So basically the assessment period is like the brainstorm period, okay? Intervention is actually putting those brainstorms into actual ideas and strategies. Then integration is the action period. Integration reflects the resolution of the conflict the client experiences between religion and sexual identity, so actually working towards it. And resolution will look for different will look different for each client as it reflects his or her own goals. Here's another model of integration. Morrow and Hawkshurst, who Sue Morrow happens to be my advisor, and she is a lovely lady who I fully love, best feminist woman I've ever met. She's got purple stripe down her hair, and she wrote this with her partner Donna, who happens to work here at the Women's Resource Center. They're just like some awesome feminist women. Highly recommend you ever get a chance, you meet them. They wrote this model back before I even met them. I cited them, so kind of cool I ended up getting to work with them. But they created this feminist multicultural model, and it focuses on empowering your clients through integrating spirituality itself in the setting of therapy. What you do is, in therapy itself, you start to identify and recognize all of the different identities, all the different multicultural identities that would be of value. So social class, race, disability, age, and ethnicity. And by doing so, you focus on intersections of oppression that come from each identity. It sounds really abstract, but it's also really powerful to be able to intersect spirituality within each and be able to integrate that within recognizing oppression. It's just, oh, the stuff of life, man. Okay. And then last one, we'll start taking questions.
I was wondering though, with the spiritual thing, like,
yeah.
I'm imagining like that integrating spirituality is discussing about spirituality, or is there actual like spiritual practices being done, like with a therapist?
I think it works with, I think it works differently with each client. So for some, it would be meditation while reflecting upon different identities and then reflecting upon oppression that you've felt, but it's just going to be different for every client. You know, this is very individually based and very client focused, very person centered. Like I said, it sounds very abstract. It would be up to every client and what each client needed. If you found a feminist multicultural counselor, they would be able to help you with this. The GRACE model, which I really love as well. There's goal exploration, which is kind of like brainstorming again. The renewal of hope is really beautiful because it's really focusing on where parts of religion can be a positive part in your life. So finding bits and pieces of where religion could have and was a positive influence in your life and focusing on that, and then really exploring new possibilities. So Maybe you weren't able to find anything that you really liked about your past religion, but moving towards meditation, moving towards maybe you enjoyed prayer, moving towards that, and getting past negative judgments from like religious experiences in the past. Then you move towards action, where you discuss how you can connect this with religion. With connection, the connection phase, you you start finding affirmative religious communities, and those could even be online, or you can start finding religious communities in person and start going to those. It could even be trying to find like a affirmative ward and working towards going there. And then the last step is empowerment, where you as a client start working towards empowering experiences and emotions to be able to encounter social resistance. It's really a time where you empower yourself so that in the future, when you do happen to encounter any resistance from anyone else, you feel empowered to be able to let that roll off your shoulders more from religious figures. So that pretty much sums up my presentation. This is a really lame summary because I know I covered a lot, but in summary, research finds that the LGBT community is, in general, more moving towards spirituality, adapting their faith to be more affirmational in general, or integrating. And then, but it's so important to know that many so do choose to stay in their faith of origin. And that creates conflict, and it's just our role, not only as counselors, but as the people who support them, as their friends, as their family, to allow each person to be able to tell their own story and support them through that. Thank you all for sitting through this. I really appreciate it so much.
All right, we've got 12 minutes. For further questions, so.
I have a question. I think you touched on it here with your resolution, but how do you as a clinician reconcile supporting the client where they are and honoring their beliefs and their path with what you're talking about as really, you know, pathological issues, like when you called it, I think, institutionalized heterosexism. If you're trying to come from a straight-spaced approach to say, your gender queer identity or your non-conformism or your homosexuality or whatever it is one of the most beautiful things about you. There's so many strengths in you because of that, but they see it as a weakness to be overcome. How do you reconcile that as a clinician? Like, how do you join with them while still maintaining evidence-based best?
Oh, that's so hard. Because I think, especially, I don't want to like agree with you, but I am. Because I think as me, like I definitely as a counselor, I feel a lot of times with my clients very mama bear, like I want to protect them, you know? And I hate it when other people aren't like nice to my clients, like, you know, like, and I think that I try and see as much as possible where my clients are coming from, and that they have value from their religious identity. And I also try and think back to how I had and do at times have value from my religious identity, you know. And I try to allow them to really part of my journey as a counselor is to be a multiculturally competent counselor, and that means understanding that that there are so many different multicultural spaces that are oppressive but are still important. And just because a multicultural space, like for example, the Latino culture is oppressive to women at times, but that doesn't mean that it's not important for me as a counselor to understand that community and respect it and understand the customs and respect the culture, you know?
So you wouldn't, for example, say to a Latina woman, have you noticed the machismo around you?
Right.
You should maybe consider joining a different family.
Yes. Yes.
Rotating a different ethnicity.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I try and, especially when it comes to religion, because you can't just change your ethnicity, and I feel like that's how it comes with religion. So many people feel like they can't change their religion, like you can't change your ethnicity. It's not a fair comparison, but that is how so many people feel about
and
their
that
religion.
That's actually
yeah.
helpful.
Yeah, no problem.
I have a question.
Yeah, please.
So you've given us these kind of three possible approaches, one of which is not really possible.
Right.
To dealing with these two identities, right?
Right.
And it seems to me that the church has adopted none of these. Because you're not supposed to leave the church. There's no real way to integrate these identities. But we've mostly let go of reproductive therapy.
Right, right.
yeah. Disappointed to find corners of the church where we haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, I mean, how do you see that working or failing to work, maybe?
That's a great question. I think that this might be unpopular, but I definitely see within research that that when it comes to sexual identity, that that really there's more and more research, and my professor was even giving did research on this as well, that your sexuality is on a spectrum. And so you are absolutely gay, but some people are gay-ish. And so the people that are gay-ish are sometimes able to get by being married in a heterosexual couple. Are they as happy as they would be if they were able to live an authentic lifestyle? Absolutely not. So I think it's up to every person who decides whether or not their religion is more important to them than their sexual identity. And I think that that's where the church, obviously the church right now as it is, isn't budging on what their idea is. And they keep saying abstinence is the only way that you'll be able to get by or be heterosexual. That's where I'm seeing some people, like we have Josh Weed, who is able to have a heterosexual marriage and be happy, as he claims. And so, sorry, that sounds terrible. I don't know whether or not he's happy or not. And so that's where I think some are able to stay in the church. I don't see, unless you're asexual, I don't see too many people being able to be abstinent for their entire lives. I just don't, you know. So I do see eventually most LGBT people or LG. I think that some people who are bisexual are able to choose to be heterosexual in that case. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. No, I could go on for a while about that. Yeah. Yeah.
So, kind of along the same lines, I guess when you're talking about integration with and supporting your client, would kind of balance that out? Would the happiness that they would achieve in a heterosexual relationship
be more than the happiness that or guilt that they might feel by leaving their faith and pursuing a homosexual or what LGBTQIA relationship.
Right.
Just is that a scale as well? Because I know that I have some friends who are definite, they are gay. I have two different friends, one who's choosing to enter into a heterosexual relationship at one point, and one who's choosing to be abstinent for their entire life. And these are like my two friends that are very, very Mormon, and
sure,
that is their choice. And part of the reason they've chose that is because of that scale.
Mm.
So how would you approach that as a counselor, I guess?
I think for me, when it comes to approaching that, I mean, so you're talking about how you have these friends who are doing different things,
mm-hmm,
right? And I think that you hit the head on the nail in that every person is so different.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it starts with giving each of my clients happiness and depression scores, and also testing for suicidality and making sure everything's okay, because if
mm-hmm
that is an issue at all, then we address whether or not things need to change. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds so clinical, because I hate scales and I hate measures, but but I do want to make sure that my clients aren't at risk at all for being unhappy. And then from there, really wanting to make sure that where I do see is that it could change one day, and we even talked about this in the chapter, and when talking about grief, is that sometimes it will be the best thing for your clients is to say, you know, it's okay to take a break, but never leave the option of, like, you have to leave forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, leaving the door open so that they feel as if they can come back. Like, leaving that. And I think that so that as if, because if you make it sound as if, like, they have to leave and they can never come back again and you're closing that door forever,
mm-hmm,
often that can be very dangerous and make you feel as if, like, there's no way there's no turning back point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a fine line between just always checking in between one or the other, and that can change at any point depending on what's going on. And like you said, or as we were saying, like, any person's different, and at whatever's going on in any person's life at any time can change. So my short answer is yes.
Yeah, I just kind of wondered how that fit underneath the umbrella of, like, letting them choose, lead their path, and
right
at the same time wanting to help them.
Right, because you never want to, there is a fine line as a counselor between allowing them to lead their path, but also not allowing them to let
yeah
that path be into destruction.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're in counseling, then they're on a right path generally. So, yeah. And counseling in itself is self-reflective. And
mm-hmm
counseling is good. When you're not in counseling, that's generally when you have your blinders on and you're not really seeing where you're going, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I have a question. I know you mentioned that it sort of is just, towards the end, it was just focusing on the LGB side of things, but I'm wondering, is there any research being done, like, towards, like, more things, like, and it was mostly even just focusing on LG, like how bisexual, pansexual people, asexual people, and then various types of trans people. Is there any research being done? Because obviously the approach, this is, like, it is helpful. It isn't tailored specifically to them. So I'm wondering if there's
yeah
any research being done specifically for these other types of gender and sexual identities.
No, you're absolutely right. We, for a really long time, what was popular in research world wasn't even lesbian research. It was gay men. And just recently, lesbian research has been popular. And now we're just starting to, and still bisexual research is really ignored, widely ignored. It's starting to get a little bit of traction. Pansexual and asexual, as you mentioned, has been widely, widely ignored. And then transgender now is starting to gain a little bit of popularity. And then even still, like within bisexual research, men get researched a lot more than women do. And that just goes to show patriarchy. And patriarchy occurs in research. And there's more men in research than there are women. So, of course, gay men are getting researched before lesbian women were getting researched. So you see that trend in research itself. So the answer is, unfortunately, it will come 20 years, probably too late. But eventually, we need the people who are, and it, this is what's, I could go on a whole rant about this, but we, unfortunately, it tends to be that the straight heterosexual people don't feel the need to do that research for the minorities themselves, and that was really, like, frustrating for me to see myself starting this research, that that there aren't enough people that are able to represent themselves within the research, and then there aren't enough heterosexual people doing the research out there. So my answer for you is not right now, and I'm sorry. Yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah?
I have a question. I have no idea whether you can answer
sure.
it or not.
Sure. Yeah, shoot.
Do you think that there are more people now who are staying active in the church and are also actively gay, living a gay lifestyle? I never know what to say.
Yeah. I can answer within my own generation, and the pattern I'm seeing is no. I'm seeing more leave. And I think it's because the church has been so harshly, like, consistently putting out, you know, as we've seen this trend of it's become more and more popular to support marriage equality, and the church has strongly over and over and over again, hey guys, just so you know, we don't support marriage equality, over and over and over again. And with little to no budge, you know, we have mormonsandgays.org, and yet there's no press for it. There's no one says anything about it. That's this somewhat pretty, I mean, fairly good website saying that we should support one another, and yet there's no information that's put out there about it at all. So, I mean, there's no official data on it, but no, I don't think so, from my opinion. I don't think so. I don't think the church is doing itself any favors at this point. That's
all right. I think we're going to wrap up, but I encourage you to find Amber and ask her more questions.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate it.